Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Ian Pooler and your co-host this morning is Ada Wong. Good morning, Ada.
Good morning, Ian.
Now, the Ombudsman, Alan Lai, has criticised the government for its unacceptably slow progress in preventing unauthorised construction in pockets of land bordering country parks. At the moment, there are 77 villages or farms that lie within or next to protected areas, but they're not designated as part of country parks for legal or financial reasons. We'll be taking a closer look at this issue as our main topic on the programme today. And besides that, we'll be finding out how the local newspaper business is getting a shade more competitive with the entry into the market of another free sheet. And our guests on the first part of the programme today include Yung Ng, who's chairman of the Association for Geoconservation Hong Kong. He's in our central studio this morning. Good morning to you, Mr. Ng.
Good morning, Hugh.
And also Roger Nissim, who's adjunct professor in the Department of Real Estate and Construction of Hong Kong University. Good morning, Mr. Nissim.
Morning, Ian.
And also in our studio here in Broadcast Drive, Paul Zimmerman, founding member of Designing Hong Kong.
Morning.
Good morning to
morning.
You. Now then, I've taken a look at the Ombudsman's report, and it looks a bit like the script for a Shakespeare play. Perhaps you'd like to enlighten us. What's it all about? What is the problem that the Ombudsman has?
You're asking to all three of us at the same time.
Well, Paul, perhaps you'd like to sort of give it a shot to start with.
Well, I think it's just fantastic how the Ombudsman has the power to rip open files that are laying around the various government offices and show to all of us that this issue is not an issue of the South Sunday Morning Post report on the 16th of July last year, but is in fact a story that goes back to 1994 and shows that government has been sitting on their hands and shuffling this issue back and forth between the various departments. My view on that one is that in 1991, 1992, there was a comprehensive review of the town planning ordinance, and we looked at the issue of betterment and compensation. This really looked at how can we do better planning in Hong Kong. And one of the things that came out is how can you compensate for people that can't use the land as they expected it? And that compensation issue really has never been resolved, and we've left that on the table. So we're asking the planning department to basically put up restrictive zoning plans on these enclaves, but we don't give them the tools to implement them. So these guys go around and they draw these plans, but if they don't have a way of settling with the landowners or finding a way with the landowners, they can't really progress. And till today, that's the case. The government, in one hand, does not want to compensate for downzoning, and then the planning department doesn't know how to resolve the issue. Roger may have other views.
No, I totally agree with you, Paul. For many, many years, ever since Murray McLehose introduced the country parks back in 1976, government has tried to get conservation for nothing. It started off quite satisfactorily because the country parks originally were substantially government land and therefore there were no issues. But as we move forward into the 21st century, this whole perspective has changed. The Dai Lung Wan, Sai Wan incident of the summer of 2010 actually lit the touch paper. I mean, there were 80,000 entries into Facebook objecting to this. I mean, the public really woke up to what was going on. And I think what's happened now is there's not a subtle shift, I think it's a very significant shift, which enables the government really to grasp the nettle of this whole point about should there be resumption for the expansion of the country parks. If you'd said this 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you would have been laughed out of court. It's not a public purpose. But I would suggest to you that today it very definitely is a public purpose. And I mean, if Donald Jung stands up in his policy address next month and says, I'm going to allocate $2 billion a year to buy out these enclaves per annum, I think he'll get a round of applause. I don't think he'll get criticised. The expansion of the country parks is a permanent legacy for everybody into the future. And by the way, I'm sorry to sort of prattle on, but it was interesting. The Marine Parks Ordinance was enacted in 1995. There is a provision in there for land resumption on the premise that it is a public purpose. So as long ago as 1995, it was suggested that, and written down in a statute, that resumption was a public purpose. Now, if it's okay for marine parks, I think it's certainly all right for country parks. And the government has now got this responsibility. Finally, my final comment, just by way of introduction, I think the bits and pieces, the Ombudsman thing is actually helping to push it all in the right direction. But we're getting a very good prompt from the mainland, from the central government. Very recently, most significantly, the Central People's Government on the 9th of May 2011 extended the decisions of the conferences of the parties to the Convention on Biological Diversity. That was originally ratified in 1993. It's now extended to Hong Kong. So the government now has got an absolute mandate to go ahead and tackle this issue properly, not to keep dancing around the issue. And I think they've really got to really grasp this nettle. And I think they've got the powers and authorities now to go ahead and do that. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to hear what Ada says. She's been in LegCo. She understands how this goes.
No, I've only been in urban council and district council. So. No, but there's one point I don't really understand. Perhaps Paul or Roger, you can enlighten us. In the Ombudsman paper, in 1998, the Planning Bureau actually said that it is not feasible to include, all these enclaves in country parks because the option to resume private lands for a conservation purpose has been ruled out, and there simply is no other feasible means besides statutory plans.
Well, it's now time to rule it in.
Yeah, but as far as I understand, even if you do a statutory plan, there is a certain consultation period.
Yes, there is.
Right? Yeah. And people can object, the landowners can object. So even though that, the process is about statutory plans, it doesn't mean that they don't have to pay.
No, exactly. I think, again, they need to be braver. These enclaves should be zoned for country park purposes, not for sort of these sort of special SSIs. This very passive approach that's taken place in the last 20 years hasn't achieved anything. The recent incidences have demonstrated this really clearly. It's got to be far more positive. And I think public money should be used to buy up the enclave so that they can be embraced into the country park. And then I think they should be managed by the AFCD, who've the only real entity in Hong Kong that have got the ability and the manpower to do it. So you have public money to buy it, and you have the public entity to run it. And that way, everything will, as I say, the country parks will be expanded. It's a legacy for the future.
Yeah, I do agree. I really agree with Paul's comment and also the Ombudsman comments on this particular problem that we have been hanging on for so many years. And in fact, our association have submitted the same sort of complaint, quite similar complaint, in the middle of 2009. We specialize in complaining the area in Ma Si Chau, Shui Mong Tin Ma Si Chau in Tai Po. Actually, we did that as a complaint to the Ombudsman in the middle of 2009. They carry out some investigation, but the result is that they find that it's not the government's doing right. And so nothing can be carried, or no action will be taken, and no comment. Actually, the government's not doing anything wrong at that particular moment. But thanks to the Taiwan, the Taiwan incident, because of the so many public support against destroy or the damage of the nature, and that bring out the issue again. And I think this is mainly the reasons why our government or ombudsman, is really have the sort of a willingness to raise this issue and really seriously investigate into the problems that we have right now. Mm. And I appreciate the government effort, and I also appreciate the public support to raise out the issues. And I do hope the government will continue that sort of momentum in pushing forward these sort of things. And Roger is quite right to point out that we really have to seriously consider whether the government or Hong Kong should buy in some sort of enclaves that we have right now, because they're so sensitive, particularly after the establishment of the Global Geopark in Hong Kong. Some area quite valuable and which have to be taken very, very serious attention to. Mm.
Does anyone know what is happening to the Saiwan site? Because I read this morning in a Chinese newspaper that the owner has started development works again, very quietly. Paul, do you know anything about it?
What we understand he's doing is actually fixing up the houses that were within the lots that he has bought. He hasn't gone beyond that. He can't build anything in addition, because it's now under a development plan, permission area. So anything that he adds to what was existing when the DPAs were announced, he has to get approval for, and all eyes are on him. So he sticks exactly to the letter of the law, and he has gardened the area that he owns. So that is within his right. So I don't think we can say too much about it. Whether it's the right thing for the area is not a matter. I would like to come back to your point that you raised earlier. If you take over the land under the Country Park Ordinance, you'll have to do this compensation and government has to pay for it. It's the same with heritage. If you declare a monument and then so then you'll have to get to the point that it has to be compensated for. That was with the linking lay on the Stubbs Road as well. And government then avoided the statutory process that would force them to compensate, and they try to deal it outside that by using the zoning mechanisms. But zoning, basically, if there is no compensation agreed on for rezoning and changing the zoning for a particular area, which has been decided on in 92, where we decided that it would make it too expensive, our planning, and with the ability to zone and rechange zoning, if you have to compensate every time you change zoning, we don't want to have to pay for that. But on the other hand, the planning department that looks at it, that looks at these private rights, the hungry cook will go to the top level in government and say, like, wait a second, you're going to use rezoning for land that we own. We don't like that. So they will use political pressure to get to a point to block the zoning system because they know if that happens, there is no compensation for them. So therefore, the whole thing is then get stuck. And the poor planning department sits there in the middle and nobody gives them guidance. So they don't do anything according to these papers of the ombudsman. And then the ombudsman points the finger at the planning department and says, like, you guys are at fault. That's wrong.
No, Paul, you're absolutely right. And it's going back to the fact that the government has got it in its head that all this conservation can be done free of charge. That's a complete myth. You pay as you go. I mean, buying the land for the country parks is no different to when I was buying land for the expansion of Chartier New Town. It's required for a public purpose. It's zoned for the purpose. You then go to the Executive Council and get authority to buy it. And the funds are made available in your
And so the land in 1998, the kids have moved on to the UK, and nobody was interested and paid anything for the land.
Paul, government's got a system. There's a zonal compensation plan
for agricultural land.
And it includes zonal, there's zone D for these outlying areas. The Hungry Cook know about this, the villagers know about it, the government know about it. They've set the system. The whole of the new territories has got a zoning attached to it. Most of these enclaves will be zone D, which is 30% of the standard rate. It's about $185 per square foot to buy it at today's rate. Not a huge number. Interestingly, quite recently, I did an exercise with the Countryside Foundation on Shao Lao Tung. And if government was to go and resume all the private interests in Shao Lao Tung, the bill would be $1.45 billion.
Okay, but if I
the question then is it worth it?
Sure, no? But I take the Hungry Cook position and they say, come on, when the Brits took over Hong Kong, we had these leases on the land. They were our land and they were unfettered. We could do it at the land whatever we wanted. And you then put zoning on it and reduce the value of the land. That is unfair. You know, that's against the old established rights of me as the villagers. And that's the position they take. And they actually, one of the CE candidates, CY, is actually supporting that position. And, you know, I'm sure that's because he needed a vote in the next year to make sure that he actually can become chief executive. But he's taken that position that it's an unfettered right to that land.
No, but the vast majority of the NT land is agricultural, it's non-building status. Agriculture is the wrong word. You can't build on it.
But there's an expectation, you know, of a lot of NT villagers that, you know, their land can be upzoned and can, you know, zoning can be changed and it can turn,
but
residential property.
But you need access roads, you need drainage, you need sewage, and who's got to provide that? The public's got to provide it. As it stands, most of these enclaves, and let's go back to the subject, which I think is a very interesting one, because I think this working paper, and, you know, looking at the review of criteria for designating country parks, was a really positive step forward. And I think it was in recognition of the mainland government signing us up to the biodiversity requirements back in May. And they are, you know, these 2,000 hectares, I would suggest, would all be in this zone D compensation rate, and government would be quite within their rights to zone it for country park and purchase it under those circumstances.
But
and if the, then there's a mechanism.
Sure, but
if the villagers don't like it, they can go to the Lands Tribunal.
Well,
you know, so that there's a safety net. If they feel that the zonal compensation rate is inadequate because it's on an ex gratia basis, they've got a statutory mechanism if they choose to use it.
Well, which we've seen with the
Express Rail. Let's stick to the system. That's all I'm asking.
Sure, sure, but that's what we have seen with the Express Rail. The government was very easily banned to get away from that zonal compensation and compensate for much more for the villages that were affected by the Express Rail.
It's made a rod for its own back by creating a very unhealthy precedent.
I think we're talking
about a different animal here. I mean, the line for the Express Railway was going through a built-up area. The question was it an indigenous village? Was it not? Mm. We're not talking about dispossessing anybody of their housing. Yeah. This is not a rehousing issue. It's a different animal altogether. We're talking, as somebody said earlier, a lot of these places, the villages are abandoned. Nobody lives there anymore. But the potential for it to come back sure exists. But all the agricultural land can be bought very rapidly, very quickly, and effectively turned into the country park.
No, but the reality, of course, of this land right now is because of helicopters and fast boats. And
exactly, it's now accessible.
They're all billionaires, or we're not, but there are a lot of billionaires, rather than buying those pieces of beautiful seaside in places like Bali or Phuket. We can now buy them in Hong Kong. So the value has shot up.
Paul, this government is one of the richest governments on the planet. let's spend the money wisely. They've prepared $60, $70, $80 billion to build a railway to Guangzhou. Oh. Can we spend a few dollars in Hong Kong, please?
Buying up land for country parks is actually better than dishing out 6,000 to those who do not need it, right?
That's true. That's true.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I'll contribute my $6,000 to buy however many square feet of a country park that'll buy. I'll happily sign up today for that. Yeah. Absolutely right.
I think the problem of our government is the determination, whether we are going to actually determine to resist or just to face the problem of the political pressure that they have from the cook. And we do understand it's very important to respect the rights of the local residents or the villagers. But being part of the society, we're talking about whole Hong Kong. We have more than 7 million people here. It's not just the villages that they own Hong Kong. It's actually the whole land itself belongs to the Hong Kong people. So we have to actually sit together now and seriously consider different options. And I think Roger's option will be one of a quite good one. And we really can seriously consider it right now.
It's the only way the rural community and the Hong Kong will sign up for it.
Okay, let's get to reality. Ada just read the 1980 quote. We can read the 92 quote where it says the ability of the Hong Kong community to do planning and change land uses, such as the conservation or for other purposes, must at all times remain affordable. Mm-hmm. So that was the conclusion after the study on the compensation and betterment issues that was done in 1992. So, and then in 2003, in the new nature conservation policy, the government reconfirms again that land resumption, land exchange, off-site mitigation options, transfer of development rights are deemed impracticable and not applicable. And keeping
Paul,
these options
we're talking
open.
About political will here.
I know, but I'm just saying.
So this is where we've got to try and change the mindset. And I think the tide is that you're talking 92. You're 20 years out of date.
Well,
I think that the world has changed very significantly.
So what is the political will like in 2011?
2011. Well, we've got a new CE coming in. What was another document?
I've just quoted his position on the Hung Yee Kuk.
But let's go back. But let's talk money. Let's talk hard money. Back in 2003, 2004, the government produced a review document on nature conservation called Nature Outlook. And they identified 12 sites. And actually, I think six or seven of them are actually enclaves. These sites were graded according to their naturalness, their biodiversity, their non-recreatability, blah, 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 blah. But included in this was a point about land resumption. They said the financial implications were huge. They could involve the acquisition of about 10 important sites, 1,000 hectares, and it would cost about $20 billion, they said.
2004.
$20 billion. But I think the whole point that's got to be made here, they need a strategy and a policy. You don't buy all of them in 1 year.
Mm.
You do shallow, if you set $2 billion aside each year for the next 5 years, you then go through this list of the most sensitive sites, pick off the most significant ones, and you go and buy them. Maybe you go do Shao Lao Tung first, and then you go to Dai Wan, or you go to different places. And you have a progressive program so that the money gets spent properly and you prioritize it. You don't write out one big check in 1 year. Anyway, the Lands Department haven't got the staff to do the resumption, so you do it progressively. We've got the ability to do it. We've got the money. We've got other mechanisms. You can do land exchanges if that's appropriate. You know, you can transfer development rights. There are all sorts of different ways to handle it. This government's got so many tools in its toolbox and is choosing not to open that toolbox to deal with this problem.
Well, what about other means of land planning control? The Ombudsman is actually not recommending that, you know, government talks about money and land resumption. The Ombudsman suggests that, you know, all the relevant departments expeditiously prepare statutory plans for those enclaves that are still unprotected or to incorporate them into country parks.
Mm. Well, but he's saying what we're saying. If he wants them incorporated in country parks, you're effectively taking away the existing use rights of the landowner. And so if you're going to do that, you've got to compensate him to do the job properly and, more importantly, to do it fairly and equitably.
But what about
if you
statutory
want, they're
plans?
Still trying to do it for nothing.
Yeah, okay.
Are you saying statutory plans are totally useless?
Yes, I am. They're far too passive. You've got to get out there and do the job properly. The statutory plan should say these enclaves should be zoned for country park. And the implication of that is they're to be resumed. Not all in the same year. Mm. Absolutely not all in the same year. I'm not suggesting that for 1 minute. But financial planning, as I say, this government is hugely rich. It's got assets that most other governments on this planet would die for, and it just needs to allocate resources to do the job properly.
There are two basically statutory planning processes that we're looking at. The first one is what I call the freezing, and the freezing is done through the development permission area plans. And the government can do them quickly and simply. There is no reason why we're still waiting for 40 of the sites to be done. Mm. It's now more than a year after it was announced in Letchko by government that they're going to do the DPAs on those enclaves. And why they haven't completed all of them is a mystery, because really doing DPAs is very standard. You take the boundaries and you slap on the DPA.
Well, it's about time and money and human resources constraints.
Well, that's what they say, but that's what I'm saying. The DPA is such a simple document to do for the planning department. They can do them all
DPA
almost
DPA is
the same.
What? Permission area?
Development permission area. Which basically freezes all the development to the current status. So anything beyond what is there, even if you are in the process of constructing your house and you're halfway, after the DPA is announced...
And there's no way to object? The landowner cannot object?
What it does is, if you're, say, halfway constructing your house and the DPA has been announced, it means that to be able to complete construction of your house, you have to get an approval from a town planning board. The town planning board, if you're halfway construction of a house that was already approved, the town planning board is definitely going to give you permission to complete it, unless there are many overriding reasons. So the DPA is what needs to be done very quickly. Then the next thing is, and that's what is being talked about, what are you then going to do with the land? How are you going to use it in the future? Is it going to be included in a country park, or is it going to become an amenity area, or is it an area where there's going to be restaurants and a little hotel and a hostel, or what are you going to do with that land afterwards? And that is set out in an outline zoning plan. If you do not include it in a country park, you have to put up an outline zoning plan which positively sets out what the uses are. Now, that whole process requires a lot of discussion with the landowners. We've recently seen, when the DPAs were announced, that the hungry cook will come in with a few hundred objections and people standing outside with signboards. And next thing, with the comment period, there is us, and we're coming out with 700 comments and objections for the other side. And then, so you've got these two groups standing against each other, and the town planning board and government sits in the middle, and they are not taking a positive step forward. Combine that discussion with the Hung Yu Kuk now currently has with government on unauthorized structures. They're threatening to go in Germany and in Holland and in England to the consul generals and the embassies.
Well, this government
China.
Is really scared of the anti-villagers.
The Hung Yu Kuk is just throwing all
it's
this stuff
powerful.
Up. Mm. Well, that. Yeah. They think they are powerful, and the government makes them believe that they are powerful. Yeah. But of course, they could step back. And voting wise, things are changing in the new territories. Every time a villager builds a house and sells it to somebody else, there's not a villager living in it, but there's somebody else living in there. So the voting in and the balance of powers in the new territory is changing rapidly. And the Hung Yu Kuk should be fully aware of that. This is the last gasps of the Hung Yu Kuk, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, that's why, finally, eventually, it still go back to the government, whether they want to do it or not.
Yes, the political will.
Yeah, I think we have the whole population, majority of the population in Hong Kong, really supporting the sort of present directions that we are going. You know, nature conservation. From the example of Saiwan incident, you know that the government got a lot of support from the public if they want to do protection.
Exactly.
So what sort of, you know, I don't understand why the government is scared of being forced to, or being.
I think for a change, it could actually get a huge credit, and I think everyone would applaud it if it was prepared to allocate some resources and money to tackle this properly.
Sure. That's true. Yeah.
But their argument is precedent, so they think if they do something for the 77 enclaves, then it's going to be something that's going to haunt them all around Hong Kong for other issues.
Paul, not all
and it'll
precedents
affect
are
all the urban areas. I mean, look at King In Lay. You know, King In Lay is already a president.
Well, that was done by land exchange, Ada. There was no cost to government. They swapped the land. Yeah?
Mm. So the community gave land up.
We're going to take a break just for a few moments there as this discussion hots up. We're going to continue after the news, which is around in just 45 seconds' time. Quick look at the weather forecast first, though. It's going to be slightly cooler with a few light rain patches to start with today. It's going to warm up a bit to around 30 degrees with some sunny periods later. And the outlook mainly fine and dry weather is expected with slightly cooler mornings, at least in the following few days. The current temperature at the Hong Kong Observatory is 25 degrees. And the relative humidity is 82%.